Welcome, everybody. We're going to start with an industry overview. The first thing you need to know is that anywhere there is information, some of it has to be voiced. Think of the medical industry. Tons and tons of complex information, changing all the time. Some of it has to be voiced. But really, overall, from students that put PowerPoint presentations online and pay someone to voice their presentation, to Super Bowl commercials, to audiobooks, animation, e-learning, corporate IVR, ADR, promos, imaging, whatever it may be, we will personalize a training and career plan for you. So I'm Dave Larson. I'm a co-founder here at the School of Acting and Voiceover. Together with my other co-founder, my wife, Sarah, we've done over 20,000 recorded one-on-one coaching sessions between us. When I was doing stand-up comedy and improv in the 1980s, she was already one of the highest paid voice talent in the Midwest. We've worked with more than one talent that has made six figures in their first 6 months. But more importantly, we've helped tons of complete beginners get agents and get paid. How could we possibly have coached so many people? First of all, we have put on 76 voice acting expos to date, and we have recorded as many as 350 live one-on-one coaching sessions in a single day at the Voice Acting Expo. Now, we're doing smaller, more personalized training at the expo nowadays. It's all online, but we've been at this a long time. With other top coaches we hire to work with you, both online and through the Voice Acting Expo, I personally have co-coached and worked with, over three dozen of the top people in the industry, including a number of talent agents, talent agency owners, recording studio owners. They cast a lot of spots. They're kind of like agents. A bunch of ad agency owners. These are the people who decide whether your audition is what the client wants and who are going to direct you if you win the audition. We've worked with and brought all the voice coaches at the Guthrie to you, many of the top talent from different top agencies, award-winning producers, top people from LA, New York, Chicago, and locally. Basically, I mention this because instead of telling you what I think, I've asked these people in the industry how things are, and I'm here to tell you what it is that they told me. Something you should know is that our main classes are not open to the public. The Voice Acting Expo is. That's the only training open to anyone. You have to audition or be invited. That said, we accept most of the people who are referred to us. But we really don't want people just signing up online. Some people really shouldn't do voiceover, so opening our training to just anyone who can go to a webpage and sign up kind of scares the heck out of us. So we don't take just anyone. I know some of you taking this workshop already have an open invitation from us. Some of you need to take another step or two before you're ready to get serious about this. One of the real important things to know about the industry is that there was essentially a corporate takeover of the agency system a couple of years ago, something called Voice Bank. And through that kind of hostile change, Voice Bank was something that every agency in North America was a member of. So this really was the agency system. This was how the auditions got funneled to you. And you used to have an agent because all those auditions were exclusive, meaning if an ad agency or a Fortune 500 company put one of their auditions into the Voice Bank system, nobody else could see it. So if you didn't have an agent, you would never be able to see or compete for those auditions. Losing the Voice Bank system means that agencies have lost, they're still trying to recover, but, between 30 and 80% of their auditions, depending on the agency. Another thing you need to know, a lot of people think that radio is a very important part of voiceover. And certainly there are some high-paid national spots where some of that production goes through and gets played on the radio. And there are some DJs who are highly paid voice talent. But the bulk of what you hear on the radio, the person voicing it got paid pennies. You might be surprised to hear that of all the money spent on voiceover in North America, the money spent on voice talent for radio is less than 1%. It's important to know this because agents know this, and they don't believe that somebody who has been a radio DJ and created ads as a radio DJ is a voice talent. People in radio say, hey, I'm a voice talent. I've been voicing these commercials. And you're making $15 an hour, and you're getting it done in 60 seconds, reading a 30-second spot, and then putting it into the system, and you're doing it after the end of your shift. A lot of radio talent think of the ads they have to voice as kind of unpaid overtime. Agents don't think of that as voiceover. Sure it is, but it's not high-paid voiceover. So you've kind of got to recalibrate your thinking if you think a lot of what you hear on the radio constitutes people making money doing voiceover. A lot of it really doesn't. Now, some people say, well, what about union? How much do union actors make? I've got information that's a few years old. I've calibrated it into $20. But 80% of union actors making less than $8,000 a year. So just being union, and that was all union actors, not just voice talent, all union actors. Just being union is not a big deal. A lot of voiceover, when you look at the casting, it will say union or non. You don't have to be union. And the Twin Cities in particular, the biggest union shop, Wayman, Wayman Models and Talent, Susan Wayman, owner-founder, has pointed out if you want to work union in the Twin Cities, you have to be FICOR. Now, you probably haven't heard that term. What FICOR means, it's the union legal provision that allows a union talent to work non-union. Wayman actually got out of the union voiceover business years ago. So, short version, forget about union. You don't have to be union. You don't even have to think about it to get started in voiceover. Part of what you need to know about the industry is that it's primarily a cold read business. Theater, film, lots of other kind of acting. You have time to develop your character, to get to know who you're talking to. A lot of the writing is designed to sound human. In voiceover, not so much. And a lot of what we're looking for is what can you do on your first read or your second read. We want real people. If you come in with sort of a vocal style or a character voice and you don't sound like a real person, you're going to get rejected almost immediately. Agents reject 95% of the demos, and I have asked them, and this is their information, and they reject most of them in 3 seconds or less. I'll talk a little bit about that in a bit, but I wanted to give you kind of an overview of the industry. I'm concentrating on those surprising facts to help you recalibrate as to what we're talking about here. Another thing is, everybody does commercials. It doesn't matter if you're interested in animation or audiobooks or what it is. If somebody says, hey, could you do this commercial? There are all kinds of commercials. So there are some that are perfect for you, your approach, your sound, your personality, and there's plenty that aren't. Everybody in the industry is looking for people that make us want to listen to you, not people that lecture, not people that sell or argue, not announcers, real people we want to listen to. Those of you who are familiar with animation voiceover probably know who Phil Lamar is. He has over 450 IMDb credits, and a quote from him is, what kind of work does he do? I do the work they let me do. He does theater, he does animation voiceover, he does any kind of acting work that he can get, as does everybody else. So if you want to move forwards in voiceover, you really don't want to shut the door on certain kinds of voiceover. That said, you do have to focus on what's most realistic for you and where your area of interest is, but you don't want to close doors before you really know what's behind them. I'm just going over the industry overview here. Another thing people say is, well, geez, I'm going to need some expensive equipment. In an interview on April 10th of this year, 2020, Phil Lamar pointed out that he was working from home using an inexpensive microphone. That interview's in The Hollywood Reporter. You can read that. I don't want you to be misled by that, but the amount of money you may want to spend on equipment can be a lot less than you think. We're going to talk about the difference in the industry working from an online marketplace versus having an agent versus doing business networking. And I'm also going to point out what we kind of call the barista problem, meaning how do you make money while you're waiting for your voiceover income to increase. In the next section of this workshop, I'm essentially going to touch on what are the stages from being a complete beginner to becoming a working talent. In our main classes, you have assignments 3 to 6 times each week, sometimes for just 10 minutes. Other times, maybe you're in a 90-minute workshop, or you're getting in more of the hours of the recorded one-on-one coaching that we give you, or you're recording homework, or you're consulting with your coach on your brand voice evaluation, or you're customizing a career plan. Maybe you're doing your daily articulation or practicing your personalized acting process exercises. Essentially, we really want to give you all we can to get you ready, but also so that you can work from home, practice from home, so you can stop needing a coach and stop taking training and continue to build your skills and build your business. The basic principle, the way we look at it, is get in and move up. Don't wait until you're totally ready in some areas. There's a lot of ways that you can get started that help you out and don't hurt you, that don't take a lot of time and don't take a lot of money. What in business, of course, we call the low-hanging fruit, the things that are valuable to do and easy to do. For example, on every email you send, you can automatically include a button at the bottom of the email. That's called an email signature, and every program and website and software out there that does email will allow you to create that. That button can say, "Hear my voice. Hear my voice." Lots of people will click it. You just link it to a sample of your voice, reading 2 or 3 short commercials. It's really easy marketing. Now, yeah, you've got to get your voice samples together, and you've got to get some commercial music behind them. But commercial music designed for voiceover makes everybody sound good. So you can get started letting people know you do voiceover real easily. I'm just throwing that out as a simple example of something that's not hugely complicated, where you're basically doing the thing that most people feel is hardest, marketing themselves, selling themselves, networking. A button at the bottom of your email works in all those three areas, and it doesn't take a lot of effort. So we've got a lot of simple things like that we can help you move towards and get started on. You need to develop your personal acting process, the steps you take to give your best performance. So what the heck does that mean, right? So someone says, "I'm getting ready to perform. What's the first step?" Warm up. Now, I'm keeping it simple, but this is absolutely true. You need to open your range. I'm going to talk a little more about that in the more advanced workshop. People then say, "What happens after I warm up?" Look at the script. Look for transitions. I like to take a highlighter, a darker one, I don't know, green or pink or blue or something, and I read the script, and anywhere I see that it kind of changes, I put a dot. So maybe it changes from problem to solution, right? They're saying, "And not all the children survived. But today, thanks to your donations." Obviously, a lot of scripts have a problem to solution transition, or maybe sort of a worry to relief. You're going to notice that. You're going to put a dot there. You're going to decide what happens. If it's changing from worry to relief, we have to hear that happen, and we have to believe that. So if you've got a short script, let's say it's a 30-second commercial, and you put 2 dots in it, you've noticed 2 transitions. Now, you can notice a lot of transitions or fewer transitions. It's all valid depending on your approach to doing the acting. Let's just say, for example, you found 2 transitions. Everything from the beginning to the first transition, that's the beginning. Everything between the 2 transitions, that's the middle. You hear it coming, right? Everything after that last transition, that's the end. You've kind of taken a simple step into some more advanced script analysis. You've identified a beginning, middle, and end to the script. You've identified kind of the 3-act play. And as you learn more about this, you can learn what to expect in those areas. The second step in an acting process is look at the script, find the transitions, make some decisions. This is also where you have to pick between the different flavors of why should we listen to you. That's a little more advanced, But that's part of what we do in your brand voice evaluation and in helping you figure out, you know, what your money voice is, where you should concentrate most of your effort. I'll cover this more in a more advanced workshop, but the first flavor is being somebody who realizes what a big deal it is that you're talking about. You have to not make a big deal out of the topic. You have to show us how you're the kind of person who knows the difference between things that matter and things that don't, and make it clear that what you're talking about is something that matters. The second flavor, essentially, why do we listen to you, is being very relaxed and sensitive. The kind of person you might think about that they're easy to interrupt because they give you so much respect, except you never do interrupt them because you can feel how much they know just how you feel. That's often what's called approachable in voiceover. And that's the second flavor. The third flavor, and there's only three, and you combine them together, and when you pick out transitions in a script, you kind of have to decide how the flavor changes. The third flavor is kind of giving in to the kid in you and letting out some immature kind of mischief. For example, you don't sell by saying, "Oh my gosh, I love this ice cream. You should try this." You sell by saying, "Oh my gosh, I love this ice cream. Nobody can have any but me." You want to be selfish. We want to believe that you want it, not that you're selling it. Be the person that wants things, not the person that sells things. We're attracted to, in other words, we want to listen to somebody who wants something, somebody who enjoys something, somebody who's having fun, not somebody who's trying to twist our arm. Okay, so the third step in an acting process, what do you do after you look at the script and make some of these decisions? This is the final step. It's to sound like you're in a conversation with a real person. So if you follow an acting process that has these stages, warm up, make some decisions, study the script, and sound like you're talking to a real person, you're going to give a better performance more easily than if you just stand up and hope that gold falls out of your mouth. The next section of the workshop here, which is some home practice tips. You don't have to take any other training to start getting better. I'm happy to get you started on practicing from home. The first thing that everybody has to practice is we have to practice our speech rhythm. There's a couple of very simple examples. We all know kind of the rhythm of a word, right? Now, if you look into what is the correct pronunciation of different words, you'll see that they talk about primary stress or unstressed syllables or sometimes secondary stress. Really, what they're doing is they're telling you about the rhythm of that word. You don't have to worry about that most of the time because if you speak the language, you already know it intuitively. For example, people say Canada. They don't say Canada. Na is de-stressed. It's not supposed to be Canada, it's Canada. And you could be a little off and you could say Canada, and that's wrong too. But you don't have a problem with that. You say Canada, so you don't have to worry about that. However, when we combine a number of words, there are also proper ways to get through the rhythm of these groups of words, and most people don't realize it. Practice the word T-O, two. And you're going to need to practice anything that has an ing in it. The reason for that is we tend to either under-articulate, we say it wrong, or in trying to say it correctly, we overstress. So if I were to say to you, "I'm going to downtown," casually, I might say it something like this, "I'm going to downtown." Now, if it's written as "I am going to downtown," whoever wrote that is paying you to read it as written. They don't want you to contract the ing. They don't want you to say "going." They want you to say "going." But you can't stress the ing. You can't say "going." That's the wrong rhythm. So here's the trick. Say a phrase casually. Don't worry about your articulation. Get the rhythm right. We call that the cadence. And then say the cadence a couple of times and then change the articulation. So here's how that works. I'm going to say, I am going to downtown. But I'm going to say it very casually a couple times, and then I'm going to fix my articulation. Okay? So here's how it goes. I'm going to downtown. I'm going to downtown. I'm going to downtown. In the last one, I said, I am going to downtown. I said it in a casual cadence. So listen again. I'm going to downtown. I'm going to downtown. I'm going to downtown. You hear that? It's more natural. You don't say, I am going to downtown. Too much stress. I'm going to downtown. I'm going to downtown. I'm going to downtown. Notice how the to sometimes sounds like an ta. That's incorrect. It should be to, but not too overstressed. Sometimes you may underarticulate the T, right? I say, I'm going to downtown. I'm saying duh. Downtown. I'm saying D-U-H instead of T-O. So I've got to articulate that T a little bit, but I can't overdo it or it sounds unnatural. So practice phrases that have T-O and I-N-G and make the I-N-G feel like it's contracted, going, but actually say it correctly, going, 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 not going. That's something you have to practice. Now, at theschoolofvoiceover.com, we have thousands of scripts. Print some. Here's how you practice. Read the last third first. Sometimes there's a twist. Find out what it is before you read it from the top. So read the last third and then read from the top. And now you've got an idea of the script. Just read it to yourself. Now practice it out loud. Practice the last sentence and say it three times. So you're going to perform the last sentence of the script three times. If the last sentence is very short, do the last two sentences. You're getting an idea of what's happening in that sentence, but you're not being biased by having gone through the whole script. Now, do the second to last sentence three times. Work your way through the script backwards and say each sentence three times and have some fun. Be loose. Try to get your point across. Try to feel what the feeling is. Now go from the top. You should have a pretty good idea already of what's happening in the script. Mark some transitions, at least two in a short script, no more than maybe five, and decide what happens at the transition. Again, maybe it goes from worry to relief. Practice those transitions. Change your body language. Change your facial expression. Change what you're thinking about. Think about something that worries you. Think about something you're glad never happened or that you don't have to worry about. Use some acting. That's how you practice a script. You don't spend a lot of time on it. You've got to get familiar with the script and give your best performance and then make some notes to yourself. How did you do? Where was there a problem? Don't record and listen back to yourself. I know that's radical, but this is an acting job. If you listen to yourself, you're going to fix all kinds of things that you hear, and your acting is going to be ruined. You've got to practice being an actor. Okay, one of the things you're going to find out when you start practicing is what I call your radar. Your radar is broken. Someone may coach you and say, okay, go a little faster here. Put a little smile in there. Use a little body language. They'll give you some direction and you'll go, oh, I understand what you're asking for. And then you'll try to do it and it won't happen. And you'll be surprised. You understood what you were supposed to do, but you didn't do it. That happens a lot when you're new. It won't happen with everything, but it will happen with some things. That's one of the reasons you need to practice. We've got a bunch of scripts online. Print them out. Start practicing. We've set up time-limited free online membership for you to theschoolofvoiceover.com. You have links to that website in the email that you received before this workshop. If you've already visited the site from any one of those links, it should have set a cookie. Basically, it's going to remember you. So you can visit the schoolofvoiceover.com website without needing to do anything else. Just visit and start reading. Start studying. Note that we are sometimes turning things on and off. So sometimes you probably shouldn't notice things are turned off, but sometimes the site is open to other visitors as well. Regardless, take advantage of that. Study the information that we are making available to you online. Okay, so that's the end of the beginning workshop. You should have already done an evaluation call with some scripts so we can give you some idea of where you're at. Do follow up and be in touch. We're going to have an email evaluation following this workshop to give you some additional steps that you can pursue for yourself. Thank you very much for attending, and we're now going to move on to the more advanced workshop for those of you who have signed up for that. Okay, so I'm going to back up a little bit to something we talked about in the beginning of this workshop to help you understand the journey from a beginner to working talent, where I talked about the different flavors, the reasons people want to listen to you, how to make people want to listen to you. I talked about that first flavor, and again, that's where we can tell that you're the kind of person who knows the difference between things that matter and things that don't. We generically call this authority or conviction. I'm going to give you an acting tip. Now, before I get into the tips on how to make people want to listen to you, you have to know that you're already good at some of the ways. We're all just built the way we are. We all sound the way we do. We've lived the lives we've lived. And so we are who we are, and we're more believable in certain things. So one of the processes that we follow is to generate kind of a brand voice roadmap. In other words, it's kind of a personality map of who you are and how to perform. The benefit of that is you realize what you already do well. And so when we're asking you to do something that you already do well, you really have to relax and let it happen. You can't put a lot of effort or tension into something where really all we're saying is, hey, we want to hear the person who walked in the room. We want you to sound like you did when you walked in the room. Sometimes it'll be a little bit like, just talk to us. Tell us what you think. Knowing what it is you're already good at, you then have to understand how to bring in some of those other flavors, how you can do some of these other things. And that's where these acting tips come in. So this won't be as useful to you as if you already have that brand voice roadmap, which we consult with you and get for you. You have to be able to be more intense on any one of these flavors without ever sounding like you're selling, arguing, lecturing, or announcing. Learning to make people want to listen to you is the point. And learning how to combine these three flavors in a way that's natural for you. Back to the first flavor, what we say authority or conviction, knowing the difference between things that matter and things that don't. The main acting trick here is don't think about the topic. Don't try to tell us or sell us or argue with us about how important something is. What you want to do is you want to think about a person who is causing themselves a problem by not understanding what a big deal this is. And then you want to magnanimously, you want to be nice, you want to help them out. You want to remember that the thing that they're missing is a big deal. Now, maybe it's a real big deal. Maybe we might say something like, you wouldn't want to get a bad cancer diagnosis, right? Maybe it's something that's very important. Or maybe it's something like, you wouldn't want to miss it when the pretzels are on sale. It doesn't matter what it is. The people that are paying you, it's a big deal to them. They want you to be a little bit fanatical about it. Get us to feel like you know that this is a big deal and you're the kind of person we should trust about that. Think about a person who's causing themselves a problem. I know a guy that works in a tall building, one of my talent that I'm coaching, and he had a great phrase. Somebody comes into his office and says something really dumb, and this is his imagination before he reads the script. And so then what he says to himself is, you must be from the first floor. In other words, he's talking down to them. The people on the higher floors really know what's what. This guy doesn't know. So he's going to help them out. This guy's a problem. So the trick to being somebody that knows when something is a big deal, to let us know that we should listen to you because you obviously know, is to picture a person causing themselves a problem and talk to that person. Don't sell them. Don't yell. Don't argue. Don't lecture. Be nice, but help them out. So that's what we call authority. The second flavor is often what we call love or connection. And this is being very relaxed and sensitive. As I said earlier, the kind of person that's easy to interrupt because they give you so much respect, except you don't interrupt them because you can feel how much they know just how you feel. So in your mind, first you need to think of things to help you relax. So the acting trick here, as one talent put it to me, is I imagine I'm finishing a bottle of wine with a friend in a hot tub at a spa, and I'm listening to the waters in the creek flow by. So whatever helps you relax puts that into your voice, and when your voice relaxes, the person you're talking to, the listener, in the case of voiceover, feels like you like them. So if I were to kind of tense up my voice a little bit, like, well, you know, let's talk about some stuff. Okay. And hey, but hey, look over there. Hey, there's my friend. Oh my gosh, doesn't she look great? Look at those shoes. I just went from this kind of more tense voice to a more relaxed voice. And that relaxed voice with a little bit of a smile, it kind of feels like, gee, I like you. I really like you. People who are naturally this way may be overly sensitive. Putting other people first in the world can be difficult. You often need to have some balance if you're going to get by and be happy in the world. But those are often people we feel don't lie, couldn't lie, don't know how to lie. They barely know how to talk. They're afraid of what other people might think. We need that sense that you're putting other people first. If you're naturally that way, often you're going to be more soft-spoken. You don't have to do a lot. You just have to imagine somebody said something interesting and you're agreeing with them. That's a little acting guidance in that second flavor, what we call connection. The third flavor, what we often call mischief, is giving into that kid inside of you and letting out some immaturity and liking things. We believe the person that wants something, that enjoys something, not the person that tries to sell it to us. So I'm going to give you an example of some national formulas, ways that advertisers say, here's what we want from a voice talent. Here's what we're looking for that bring in all three of these flavors. So the first one I'll tell you is not as relevant for commercial voiceover or narrative. It's a promo formula. A famous promo talent that we know, Dick Ervesty, you've heard his voice on a lot of stuff. He jokes about this, but he gets a description at the bottom of his script, and it says they're looking for someone who is powerful, yet warm and approachable, with a hint of mischief. Powerful is obviously that conviction, somebody who knows things that matter. Warm and approachable, obviously, we've got that connection, we've got that love. And a hint of mischief, that's the third flavor. I'm going to talk a little more about that third flavor in a moment here, but I'm going to give you another formula, one that's closer to a straightforward commercial formula. This is a national female voice formula. In other words, you think these things to help yourself be the person and give the performance that they want to pay for. So here's what you think to yourself or say to yourself, or what the ad agency has written on the script and says, this is what we're looking for. So it goes mischief plus conviction plus connection. I just do what I want. That's that mischief. You just like stuff, okay? I just do what I want. And here's the second part, because that's the best way to live your life. We've got that conviction. You know there are things that matter and things that don't. So that's how it starts out. I just do what I want, because that's the best way to live your life. And here's the third part, where you connect with other people, where you show that you put other people first, that you're interested in them. You say, and so do you. So the whole formula sounds like this. I just do what I want, because that's the best way to live your life. And so do you. So if you were going through a script and you were trying to bring those three flavors using those phrases, you would look through the script and you would say, where is it that I'm going to sound the most like, I just do what I want? And where is it you're going to sound the most like, and so do you? You know what I mean. I know you know. So you would try to find where you would apply those different flavors. A little bit about formulas, about how you put this together. I'm going to go on about mischief, the third flavor. In every rom-com and every romantic comedy, the guy at the beginning is charming, but we learn, usually pretty quickly, that they're also immature. It varies as to how they are immature or what happens next. But either they have to grow up a little bit, and that's part of the plot, or they get replaced by somebody who's more mature. Notice that I say charming but immature. Actually, a lot of what we consider charming in people are actually people who are a little bit immature. They're a little bit maybe more childish than childlike. So to get at that flavor, sometimes you have to be immature. You have to be a little self-centered. We're not getting into egotism. It's more like flirting or goofing off. My classic example of somebody who's the perfect example of that immature mischief is Calvin and Hobbes' cartoon. Calvin is digging, and his stuffed tiger Hobbes comes along and says to him, "What are you doing?" And Calvin says, "I'm digging down to China because Dad's mad at me and I don't want to be here anymore." And Hobbes says, "Won't Dad be mad that you're digging in the driveway?" And here's the classic statement of immature mischief. "Oh, you know Dad. He's going to be mad no matter where I dig." Calvin is so immature, he doesn't even have the self-awareness to say, "I'm digging in the driveway because this is where I was standing when I thought, dig." We would say he's going to have a tough time in life. He needs to grow up. He can be very charming and interesting if he's doing something fun and you'd like to join in. You sometimes have to tap into that, "I like this, I just want to do things," and realize it's immature when they're asking you for enthusiasm or to sell something to us. You've got to show how you want it, how you want to have this thing, not how we should want it, not how we should listen to you, but how you personally want it. Now, the reason these flavors and these acting tricks are so important is that a lot of what you're going to be voicing, the writers are going to make it hard. They're going to sell. They're going to argue. They're going to put in a lot of facts and figures. They're going to say the double-handed, extra wood, green length, hexagonal, you know, they're going to throw all this stuff in there. And you have to concentrate on which flavor and how do you make us want to listen. So the writing makes it hard. And that's one of the reasons commercial voiceover pays a lot of money. Short version, of course, that's why you get the big bucks, because you can make us want to listen even when the words sound salesy. The next section of this workshop is what agents want you to know. Now, really, I'm going to talk about what do agents want you to know? What do casting people want you to know? What does the marketplace want you to know? What do clients want? So I'm going to talk about the difference and help you understand from the perspective of the people in the industry what they're looking for. For agents, this is a cold read. You grab the script, you give it a glance, you work your process, you're warmed up when you get there, and you give your audition. When you get the job, you get a lot of direction. In a job where you have a producer, whether you're in your home studio and they're producing you over the phone or, you know, through your headset, or whether you're live in person, they're going to give you a direction after every take. Every single time you say something, they're going to give you a suggestion. You have to be good at that. To an agent, you need actual skills, not just a voice that your mother loves. No one cares if people tell you you have a nice phone voice or if the clerk at the grocery store says you should be in radio. Agents don't want voices. They want voice actors. And they really, really don't care that somebody sold you a demo. Now, we have an agent strategy for over a dozen cities, but our connections and network are deepest in the Twin Cities. We've helped a lot of people get a top agent without even doing a demo first. Demos aren't as important as you think. Here's reason number one. You cannot fool an agent, no matter how much money you spend on a demo. They listen to hundreds of demos a month, and they reject 95% of them. And according to the agents I've asked, they can reject them in 3 seconds, very easily. And I can explain why, but I'm passing along what they tell me. So instead of spending money on a demo, spend money learning to be good, because you can't fool an agent. They cast people from phone auditions, somebody who recorded something into their phone and sent it on. And they reject people with $3,000 demos, and they do this all the time. They know what voiceover is. How good your production of your demo is has nothing to do with how good you are as an actor. Now, people say, well, you got to have the demo and blah, blah, blah. Well, first of all, you don't. We've helped lots of people get an agent without a demo. We can talk about that. Second of all, you don't have to put a lot of production into your demo to show that you're a good actor. There are some rules you have to follow. If you don't follow those rules, you look like you don't understand the industry. So absolutely, you have to know what the rules are. You have to know how to present yourself, how it works, what's expected. That's just information. We'll give you that information. You don't have to pay anybody for that information. We'll give it to you. You have to know what it is. You get cast for paying work, secondly, from your auditions, not your demo. Agents know that. You've got to be able to audition. It doesn't matter how good your demo is if you can't audition, if you can't pick up a script and read it. So put your money into being good, not paying somebody who tells you you have to pay them for an expensive demo. So what do agents want in working talent? Number one, no red flags. They're looking to reject anybody who comes to them. They don't have a job opening. They're not looking to find somebody. They're not interested in that. They've got people. They're doing fine. They don't need somebody new tomorrow. They take new people all the time, sometimes quite frequently. Depends on the people. That's why they reject demos in 3 seconds pretty often, because they can tell right away something's wrong. There's a red flag. You've got to get over their red flags. We will tell you how to do that, from your resume to how you approach an agent. I'll give you an example. Contacting an agent for the first time and saying, hey, take an interest in me, is tough. You've made it harder on yourself than you need to. What you can do is you can read an agency website. You can contact the agent at the agency, one of the agents, tell them you read the website and ask for their advice. For example, who's good to take training from? Or do you have somebody you recommend to make demos? Asking them for that advice, even if you don't particularly care about the advice, means that later, when you feel ready to contact them and ask for representation, you now have a follow-up. You can say, thank you so much for your advice. And you can point out whichever part of their advice that you took. And it doesn't mean you have to do exactly what they say. And now you're having a follow-up with somebody you started a conversation with. So that's just a little tactic to make that first contact easier. They want cold read skills. You got to be able to pick up a script and read it. You've got to show who you are. You've got to know which one of the flavors you are, which combination you are. For example, if you're a combination of conviction, authority, right, and connection and love, the combination of those two is wisdom. Understanding who you are, you should be able to pick up a script and sound like yourself if they're looking for somebody like you. Sometimes what people who've been in the voiceover business for decades and have kind of an old school approach complain about newer talent. They say, oh, they're just those reality show voices, people who know how to sound like themselves instead of people who know how to be fake. Modern voiceover, the higher paying stuff, we need real people. We need real speech patterns. We've all heard things that are a little edgier, a little more excited, a little more authoritative, you know, staying away from promo, movie trailer kind of stuff, just commercial. We all know stuff has that little extra edge, but what you probably don't notice because you don't know how to hear it is they're all using natural speech patterns. These are all real people sounding like real people, but with a little extra edge to them, a little extra excitement, a little extra warmth, etc. So you have to learn what those speech patterns are. You have to learn how to be real and then take it up a notch. Okay, so what do the casting people want? Well, one of the things an agent pointed out to me is in marketing, if you have spending your money on a billboard, we've all probably heard this, right? How many times do you have to see a billboard before you remember what it says when you're not driving by the billboard? You drive by it and you go, oh, I've seen that before. how many times do you have to see it before you remember it in a week or in a month? The number the industry throws around is 7 times. Once you've seen it 7 times, you'll tend to remember the message. So companies like Coca-Cola and, you know, those big branding companies, insurance companies, they want to hit you with their message over and over again so you can't forget it. When you get started, the people listening to your auditions on the other end, the casting people, they're going to need to hear you a few times before they're going to remember you. When they start to remember you, they're going to start to think, I should cast this person for this spot. They're going to start to notice. So one of the things you have to do is you have to audition for those people to hear you and get to know you. They're all collecting voices. They're all collectors of voices. This isn't their first rodeo. They want to know, even if you weren't right for that spot, what might you be good for? In a session, if you're behind the glass in person and there's a producer, behind the producer on the white couch in the studio is the client usually, the people with the money. The casting people are trying to impress the client. If they've cast you, they would like to say, okay, we're about to begin, and then turn to the people on the white couch, the people with the money, and say, she's good or he's good. They want to be able to say something nice about you. So one of the things that is important to casting people is reputation, reliability. Your job is to team up with the producer to solve the client's problem. You might feel like everybody's telling you what to do, but the client looks at it as the producer, and you are working together to give them what they need. So you have to have a professionalism to you, and you have to have some reputation. That doesn't necessarily mean that you've had a paying job. They're not going to cast somebody they've heard for the first time unless somebody's backing them up. So casting people want you to do some auditions so they get to know who you are and they get to feel comfortable with you and then pick you when you're right. Now, what does the marketplace want? I've talked about what agents want, talked about what casting people want. I'll finish up talking a little bit about what clients want. Here, I'm just going to point out that we cover what the marketplace wants in more detail in our main training, but mostly because we want you to have a personalized career plan approach and not just some, you know, cookie cutter generic idea of how voiceover works. I'm going to set aside the marketplace a little bit here, but I'm going to touch on it in the last section of this workshop about where the work is. So I'm going to set that aside just for now. I'm going to talk about what the clients want. Well, they want you to win the audition. They want to pick somebody who sounded good. And how do they know who sounded good? I don't know. I just like it. You're not going to get cast on the skills. You're going to get cast on who you are. They want to hear 5, 6 people who sound very similar to you and pick the one that seems the realest. Who is the real person when they read my script? Who sounds like this is what they would say themselves? As I said, for the casting people, reputation, professionalism, the ability to take direction. I trained the branded voice of State Farm, Katie McCullough. And one of the things she said to me, she was untrained when she got that gig, which is an incredibly high-paying gig. She said after every session, she felt like she would never work again because she didn't know how voiceover worked. She didn't know the kind of direction she was getting. She was a real natural, still is. She's a great talent. One of the reasons she's a great talent, I used to say, what should you sound like when you go into a session? And I would tell people, you should sound like you just came from doing improv with kids. They like that loose. They like that fun. They like you to have a fun spark. They're looking for somebody creative. Now, if it's going to be dry medical kind of a read, that's a different situation. But for commercial, generally, they're looking for somebody who can be creative, who can try some things. When I got to know Katie, she told me that she always does improv with her kids. In fact, she said, we never use our real voices. It annoys everybody, but that's what we like. She was practicing her acting with her kids all the time. She also told me that her family, her whole life, would say things to her like, hey, Katie, who you got in there with you? Because she talks to herself. She's well socialized. She doesn't sound like somebody, you know, rummaging around behind a dumpster talking to herself kind of a thing. She seems like a regular person, but she uses her voice. That's what makes her a great natural. She speaks well. There's some other factors, but she's always warmed up. She's got that warm-up state out of the way because every day she's using her voice for fun with her kids or by herself. If you're in a session and you get tense and you're not used to talking and playing with your voice and being creative, but keeping it within a realism, you're going to get worse. The more they ask for, the more artificial you're going to sound. You're going to try to give them what they're asking for, and we're going to lose that real person sound. You need to have an acting process. Or you need to do improv, do stand-up comedy, do theater. You need to have a lot of working with your voice in your life. If you don't, the acting process is going to be crucial for you. People who are experienced and who work all the time in a variety of things, they still warm up. They still have a way that they look at the script, and they still have a way that they focus when they perform to make it sound like there's somebody there. They have an acting process. You need to have one too. One thing I want to point out is the first time you get paid, higher paying gig, particularly when there's somebody producing, that's when you get a reputation. Before that, you don't really have one. A little bit, depending on people hearing you audition and a bunch of other factors, but that's a really big deal. And one of the things we train you for is to look really good when you get that first high paying produced gig. Okay, so the next section of the workshop, the next to last section here, is where the work is. I'm going to break it down a little bit. I'm going to say there's three marketplaces. Now, that's a little misleading. It's just a way of looking at it. They definitely overlap. Online work versus agency work versus business networking. I'm going to touch on where you have an edge and where you may have a disadvantage. Whether you're thinking audiobook or animation or commercial or corporate, the greatest advantage to talent right now is in audiobooks. You may not want to do audiobooks. That's fine. You may think, well, I'll consider it. Tell me more. But I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to talk about online marketplaces. There's three parties, three groups of people in every online marketplace. There's the owners of the marketplace. They started the marketplace to make money. So guess what? If they don't keep making money, they're going to be unhappy. They're going to be the last people to be unhappy. They're always going to make sure that the marketplace makes them money. They're going to keep that advantage. That's why they're there. Who's the second group of people? Those are the clients. Those are the ad agencies and the Fortune 500 companies that are bringing their auditions there. They're bringing the money. They have to be happy too. So the owners of the marketplace are going to make sure the people with the auditions are happy. What makes them happy? In some marketplaces, it's getting decent voiceover at a low price. Other marketplaces, it's getting high quality voiceover no matter what the price. And there's obviously in between. Who's the third party at every online marketplace? Well, that's us, the talent. And we're the ones that are going to suffer first because there's no way to keep all those three groups of people happy. So one of the reasons I want to point this out is for you to be able to see where you might be at a disadvantage or where you might be at an advantage. I'll give you an example from Voice123 a while back, voice123.com. They created a new rule that if you wanted to audition, you're a voice talent, you had to pay to audition. You had to buy credits, and then you could spend those credits to audition for different paying gigs. So it was going to cost you money just to audition. Now you can see how this works. You're going to be disadvantaged because they're not going to try to make the clients unhappy, and they certainly don't want to stop making money themselves. Their rationale was they had too many low quality talent, too many people that weren't good at voiceover auditioning for things, and the clients were unhappy. They were having to listen to poor quality voiceover. They tried to figure out a way to eliminate the low quality voiceover, and their thought was, let's charge a little money. It wasn't a lot of money, but that will discourage the people who aren't making any money here on the marketplace, the bad talent, to put it bluntly, and the people who are making money and doing well here won't mind spending a few dollars to audition. I'm not saying that's good or bad. Make your own conclusion, but that's an example of how the talent are often disadvantaged. So why do I say audiobooks tends to be an advantage to the talent? Audiobooks don't come first. The book comes first. There are a few exceptions, but they're very rare. The author, the marketplace, is interested in getting the book published. When it comes to getting a talent to read the book, you have a little more of an edge than you do on other marketplaces. You can work for commission only, meaning revenue based on sales. You may not make a lot of money that way, but one of the things you can do is research the author and the publisher, and if they promoted their last book and it sold well, and the author has a website, and they're on Facebook, and they're on Twitter, and they're wherever they are on social media, and they're posting articles on LinkedIn, etc., you can see they're into promotion. This is somebody who's going to promote the sales of the book. So you can look and choose who you want to work with. As you get further along in audiobooks, you can work for a combination of per finished hour and revenue share. Revenue share, again, means you get paid commissions on the sales of the book for 8 to 12 years, depending on the marketplace. So that's nice. If you do a bunch of books over time, you can kind of get a monthly check going. You'll make more money if you get paid for your time and you get a commission on things. However, a lot of union talent and some of the better narrators in audiobooks, they prefer a guaranteed payday. They prefer to get paid $250 per finished hour of work. So you can work your way towards that. Audiobooks are also a great way to break into animation. Do a fiction audiobook where the characters allow you to use your animation skills. I'm talking a little bit about online, and I'm pointing out that audiobooks have a little bit of an advantage. Talking about agency work, a lot of times having an agent simply helps you with everything else. You seem like somebody who's probably better if you have an agent versus somebody who doesn't. Now, in some cases, nobody knows whether you have an agent or not, so it doesn't matter that much. But in other cases, it can help you. So sometimes we will promote, get an agent, not to try to make a lot of money through auditioning for that agent, but to help you strategically with some other things you want to do. So I just want to throw that out there, that having an agent isn't always the way to get that agent, get the auditions, and get a big client. Yes, it happens. We've helped lots of people do that. It's the most difficult specialized skill in voiceover, basically, to succeed with an agent. You need to be a better actor. You really need to have a wider range of acting skills. And they're interested in people who really look like actors. If you're a complete non-actor, we've got some great ways to make you look like an actor to help you update that related experience section on your resume. I won't go any further about that. I'm just touching on it. I'm going to move on to business networking. Business networking sounds like, oh my gosh, you know, I don't want to do that. It's like cold calling, researching clients. But one of the things you can do is you can say, in person and on social media, you can say, I've been enjoying recording voiceover. You can create a social media post. What have you been enjoying lately? What do you like to do that maybe you didn't do a year ago? And people write about things they'd like to do. And you can say, you know, what I've been doing is I've been enjoying recording voiceover. This is an example of you networking. You don't run at people with a business card or give them links to your website or brag about the money you're going to make. You talk about something that you're doing that you enjoy. And some people will say, oh, you know, I've been looking for somebody, or our business is looking for somebody. It's true that the amount of money you're likely to make when you do networking at first is low. You're unlikely to uncover high-paying jobs just by telling people you do voiceover. But you'll be surprised how much voiceover is out there. As I pointed out, anywhere there's information, some of it has to be voiced. Voiceover is everywhere. It's in everything. It's incredible. You need to let people know. Some of the people that you're going to be in touch with may have jobs, don't pay much, you don't want to do. Some of them over time can turn into something, but you need to let them know you do it. Say, I've been enjoying recording voiceover. We're going to send you a short home study course that's going to include some reading on things like negotiating and a little more detail about where the work is. So what does the marketplace want from you. It really varies. It really depends on the different parts of the marketplace. I'm going to send you some more information on that for your home study course. Watch your email for that. And thanks very much for joining us for this workshop. Again, I'm Dave Larson, co-founder of the School of Acting and VoiceOver, co-founder of the Voice Acting Expo, and at the time of this recording, we've done 76 of those, and it's been a real pleasure sharing this information with all of you. Bye-bye.